Hello, folks at home. As you know, I'm Chris, and I am joined by Emily. Emily is a YouTuber. She plays music, but the interesting thing about her music is that it's made using entirely free and open source software, which is excellent. And I know you guys are going to love that. So before we kick off proper, Emily, tell us about your channel, because it's pretty interesting.
Cool. Yes, hello, everyone. I started making videos probably about 6 years ago, and I've always grown up using Linux, so obviously for me that was what I used. And I make lots of covers of songs that are out now, loads of different types of music, and I also write original songs. I wrote an album just before I did A-levels and recorded and released all of that on free and open source software, including all the photography, art, and everything else that goes along with an album. So yeah, it's been a bit of a journey. Wow, learning how to use amazing. Everything from scratch and all this software.
Yeah. And it really, I mean, it really is like a journey. It takes a lot of sort of working through, but once you've done it, you have that kind of like that essence of freedom, don't you?
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. Being able to have everything I use just as being available for anyone, and, you know, everyone can contribute. Not that I have managed yet, but, you know, it's a thing I could do if I wanted to. Yeah.
Well, I mean, your music and your channel is like a contribution as well, isn't it? I mean, what's the point of making all these fantastic free and open source tools if they're not going to be used to actually sort of create music?
Yeah, to be fair, that was probably one of my proudest bits was Jonathan Thomas, the creator of OpenShot, posted me on the OpenShot page on a blog, and I was like, Unfortunately, that video since got muted because of copyright, but sad times, but I was on there anyway.
Wow, yeah. So I'm going to ask the question that is like the first on everyone's list. And anyone in the chat, feel free to chime in with any questions that you might have or any thoughts. But the question that we usually ask first is, what kind of distribution do you use, and why do you use it, and what do you like about it?
So I use Linux Mint Debian Edition. To be honest, I'm not really sure why I chose it. So I grew up, my dad is a hardcore Gen 2 user, which is great, because originally people were like, what distro do you use? And like Gen 2, and they're like, whoa, you're so hardcore. Whoa. But really, it's just because my dad did it. So I grew up using that, and then I switched at some point to Linux Mint, and then switched to Debian Edition after I got fed up with the having to reinstall it thing, like the rolling release being much better for me. And I guess, I don't know, I like it because there's a lot of support online for it. Yeah. And most things you can get to work fairly easily in it. So
I'm a big fan of Mint. I think it's yeah, brilliant. It was one of the earlier distributions I used, and I've never used the Debian edition, which is the rolling release based on testing. And the reason I've kind of been put off it is because it seems like it's their third most important distribution next to their Mate and Cinnamon releases. So I always kind of feel that there might not necessarily be the community and the support behind it. But I mean, you know better than I do. What's the...
I mean, it is true that when you look up stuff, you're much more likely to find people doing just normal Linux Mint rather than Debian Edition. But today, so yeah, it seems to be that there's enough to get by. So today.
Yeah. And it seems like with you being in the multimedia space, you need to have more up-to-date software than what Mint might give you. And I suppose Debian Edition will give you that if it's on testing.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm not really that bothered. Like, to be fair, actually, most of my software is probably quite old. I haven't managed to get the new OpenShot to work yet because their app image, which supposedly just works out of the box on every distribution, has not worked on my distributions. So I was still using a very old version of that, and I used Arda 2 for quite a while, even when Arda 3 was out. But I don't know, for me, I kind of, well, if it works, don't break it, kind of thing. So, which probably isn't the philosophy that you'd think on a Debian machine, but I don't know, I kind of go with what's happening.
Well, I think it does seem to be something that suits the Linux Mint kind of philosophy, that they're quite cautious of breakages, and
yeah,
like with a working machine, that's what you need. You need something that you can turn on, you can go, and it's reliable. And the latest and greatest software for most users is probably not going to be top of their list.
Mm.
The reason why I'm always after the latest and greatest software is because I'm sort of into it, but also because I do video editing as well. And with video editing, it's gotten so much better in the past 2, 3, 5 years. That you just really want to be on the sort of newer end of that spectrum, just to take advantage of all the brilliant benefits. So I took a look at Ardor a while ago when I was thinking about trying to do something with music and see what the free open source options were. Oh boy, did it intimidate me. See, I like Audacity. It's simple. It does everything on a straight line, or the effects. But that's for talking, and talking's like, compared to music, talking's easy to work with. I've done a little work with microphones, but it's only ever been with like panels and conferences and things like that. So when you've got all of the gubbins that Ardor seems to throw at you, like that's for serious music people. So what drew you to it, and sort of what do you like about that particular software?
To be honest, I don't think I ever use anything different. I think my dad pointed out to me it was in a magazine that he was reading and was like, "Oh, have you seen this?" And then I used it. I'm not sure whether I used Audacity right at the beginning, but I guess because for me, I learned from scratch in both, not just like audio editing. It use like from there. Yeah, sorry, started from scratch in both recording music and using the software, the FOSS software, that I kind of learned to use Ada as I learned to do music. So I like look back at my first recordings and everything's panned dead center. There's no reverb. I was like, what is reverb? What's a plugin? I don't know. So it was like very, I got the audio in, but didn't really do anything else. What's compression? Like all this stuff now that I put everywhere and have learned
Yeah.
to, still very much learning, but at least could use it a bit now.
Yeah. I
Learning
mean,
it
I
from
got.
scratch was all right because I did it bit by bit. So
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I'm very impressed with like the visual effects of your channel. Like there was the one video, I think it's an original song where there's three versions of you, and there's like one of you in the
Oh
window,
yeah,
one
that
of
was
you on.
fun. Yeah.
Yeah. How difficult was that?
It's actually pretty easy. Like I just put a as long as you don't move the camera, that's a scary thing.
That's the
Or
thing, yeah.
and the lighting going slightly weird between different count like shots. But in general, like I just put a mask over it. In OpenShot, you can just put a mask down and just did it so that they were ordered to get the right ones coming
Nice.
through. I think one of the
Cool.
first videos I did, it's funny because I have an old channel with all the videos on private of when I did like 6, 7 years ago. And one of them, I managed to do it wrong. And I had the microphone stand. I had one of me like was sitting on the floor and one on a chair. And the microphone stand went in front of me sitting on the floor. So the microphone stand kind of just disappeared into thin air halfway down. So I've got this whole video of like a floating microphone stand.
Oh
But
wow. I'm gonna
yeah,
have to go back and check
but
that.
well, it's on private, so
Oh yeah, of
sorry.
course, yeah.
Maybe one day I'll roll them out for
Awesome.
giggles. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so apart from Ardor and OpenShot, now because I also had a problem with the new OpenShot. I'm on Manjaro, which is sort of Arch. I see Manjaro to Arch as Linux Mint to Ubuntu, if that makes any sense.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, so like Manjaro, it's a little bit more focused on stability. It's a little bit more focused on a smooth user experience on a rolling distribution, but it's a bit more bleeding edge, and it sort of meets up with Arch that way, and that's really good for stability and the latest and greatest software. I with but I use Mint. I must use Mint for about 2, 3 years before I actually made the jump to Manjaro, and the reason I did that was because Kdenlive was stable. When like I love Kdenlive, that's like my video editor, and it seems to have alternating release. Like one release is perfectly stable, brilliant, I get really excited about it, and then the next release is, oh, they've tried something new and it's all crumbling apart, and then the next one is back on track, and then so sometimes you might have like rollback releases and so forth. But with Mint, I had like the setup that I wanted, and it just lasted for about 2 years without really thinking about it too much. But I got the OpenShot 2.0, which is the new one, which was just released. That came through the repositories quite recently for Manjaro, and I did find that a little buggy. It did seem to crash, and there were, but I don't like the trouble is you don't know whether or not it's the Manjaro implementation of it, or whether or not it's because it's new, or whatever.
I mean, I think video editing is one thing that people who use other software would probably look at me editing a video and go, "Why are you doing this?" Because like I have used the same OpenShot for years, I'm fairly sure, because it's still a really old version and it does crash an awful lot. But then I think I've once had like 20 something videos at once, so I mean I do push it quite a lot. But like it crashes quite an awful lot. But so a like normal part of my workflow is open OpenShot again. But like I don't know, it works. It gets the videos out and it does what I need it to do. OpenShot 2, when I tried it, was interesting because I have my workflow on OpenShot and then some things have changed. And I was like, I'm not sure whether this is a bug that I can't get it to work or, like you, or whether it's a, I just haven't worked out how to use this fancy new keyframe feature. Like in theory, it looked, it's annoying because it's so exciting in what it could do. And I'm like, oh, I really want it to work. And then it either crashes a lot on Ubuntu, even worse than my other OpenShot, or I can't get it to run. But I'm still holding out for sometime soon it running and not crashing so much, and hopefully, because and I feel very loyal to OpenShot now, having been on the website and stuff and used it this time. So I don't really want to switch, and I do really like it. I'm just hoping for a bit more stability soon.
I really liked it. It was stable for a really long time back in version one. That was about. And I did use it a little bit for the more for if I wanted to do like just something simple like a slideshow, and I like the the presets are nice, so you can just drop stuff in, and if you know, and it's good to go. I never really got more into the advanced features, but Kden Live, it was quite it fit my workflow a little better because Kden Live is similar to Sony Vegas Pro. You've always been a Linux person. Has there ever been like a, so you've never been a Windows person? Primarily.
No, it's basically a swear word in my house. So it's like the evil Microsoft, the evil Apple, even the evil Google. Even though they're not really.
Well, Microsoft got called up in the European Union for taking too much information out of their operating system. So, it's I can certainly see the. The sentiment there, definitely. My mum uses Linux. She uses Lubuntu, which is
a different one. Sorry, carry on.
And Lubuntu is the Ubuntu with LXDE, and it's a really unusual choice for someone who's not particularly tech savvy like my mum. But she had a rickety old laptop. I fixed that up for her, and I used Lubuntu then, and that was. That worked really, really well because it was quite a straightforward distribution with the ability to run on just about any kind of hardware. But now she's got better and better hardware. She now pretty much only wants to use LXDE, which is quite interesting. So she's got quite a fast laptop now with LXDE on. But she has never had a single problem. Working with, and she works in local government as well with a few other things like that, so her work sort of reliability is that thing that that is absolutely paramount. And and I gotta say, she sort of asked me for some help with Linux, and I've gotta say, that's a really good, it's really good when you can sort of recommend Linux to someone and it's exactly what they need, and then they sort of run with it.
I think there's definitely some of it is justified, but a big stigma with anything Linux that's you have to be really, really, really techie to be able to do anything with it, and that's just not true. Anytime I've installation, possibly if you have someone to help you, you'd be totally fine, but and some of them are really easy, like Ubuntu's installer, even easier than Windows. I'm sure if people tried to install Windows they'd have more problems than installing Ubuntu. And loads of people moaning about how Windows updates breaks things all the time. It's not like Linux has problems and nothing else does. Sometimes it feels more like that people would have less problems if they just kind of had a go. But it's kind of helpful, I guess, if you know someone, like your mum knows you. And same with my granddad uses, Gen 2 Linux. but that's obviously because my dad maintains it for him and everything and can log in remotely and sort him out if he's put something in the bin by accident.
I suppose SSHing in to do a bit of remote. I never do that, and I should really set up a workflow for that. That would help me so many times. I got to ask about Gentoo, to be honest, because I've never been brave enough to try Gentoo. Everyone, it's become a little bit of a meme that it is just so difficult to use. Well, I mean, is it difficult to use? Because I suppose growing up with Gentoo.
Well, using it is a very different beast to having to install it yourself. I don't know. So using it basically was, we just had the GNOME 2 environment and it was the same for me as it would have been on any other distribution. If I had a problem, I was like, Dad, help me. but I mean, I could install basic stuff by myself, like compile them or whatever. But if anything went wrong, I'd have no idea what to do. But yeah, I mean, it's time consuming. He'd spend hours updating everything, and every time that an update would happen, things would break, and you have to sort it all out yourself. So you like, I wouldn't want to try it myself, to be honest. And I know it caused my mum's computer to get very out of date because she would not let him touch it in case it broke while she had something important to do. And she always had something important to do. So, you know, never got updated until he got a new computer, moved it all over to that, and then gave her that new one and said, look, this now works. And then you can update the other one. But like, yeah. So I feel like it's a fun intellectual exercise, but I wouldn't want to be using it for a day-to-day system because it just would take up too much time.
do you remember Twitch Plays Pokemon?
No.
Oh, that was quite an interesting thing. Basically, on Twitch, someone programmed in a game of Pokemon, and people could play the game on based on votes. So they vote for every key press, and to see if you could actually finish Pokemon from beginning to end. I can't remember whether or not they did it or whether or not they just kind of got themselves stuck in a corner or something and unable to get out of it. But someone took that idea and they tried to make a Twitch installs Arch, which was the attempt to install Arch through like a democratic process on Twitch. But it got hacked pretty quickly. So,
oh, wow.
which was a bit of a shame, but that it would be good to do that with Gentoo if you could get it, like just sort of a group of random strangers on the net, just try and install Gentoo.
Press some buttons.
when it comes to the sort of free and open source software, like a lot of people appeal to different sides of it because it's a pretty it's a pretty large and encompassing thing. Like the thing that drew me towards it was I was at university, and when you're at university you're trying to save as much money as you can. So like free and open source software allowed me to try out and learn all these different skills, video editing and, you know, working on distributions and even a little bit of developing apps and, you know, just working on this in your free time. There is no way I would have been able to have afforded Sony Vegas Pro when I was back at university on, you know, on a student's budget. That's like 200 quid. So, and, you know, as a student, you've got lots of time, not much money. So open source does seem to be like a logical step, and that's quite possibly why you do see a fair amount of Linux in universities these days. But as sort of time goes by, I was opened up to the, you know, the other elements of it, the source code elements, the community elements of it, the philosophy that a lot of it is your choice and how, you know, it's your system, you get to design it as you want. And these things were things that grew on me over time. It was always the initial it was that open source software basically lowered the bar to entry for me with computers in general. So like what, when it comes to like the various facets of free and open source software, obviously you come from a free and open source family.
Mm.
Although I suppose that is a strange way.
That's true.
So was it just something that was always a part of your life, or is there something about the free and open source movement specifically that really sort of energizes you?
I think it probably did just start out of a, this is what we use, but I was always quite passionate about it then at school or whatever, when we're forced to use Windows. I'm like, why do we have to use this rubbish? I want my Linux back. But like, I think I'm grateful for having grown up with it because I did computer science at uni and I went to an all-girls school. So I would never have been, I mean, not that that's a correlation, but well, it is a correlation, but not guaranteed that I wouldn't have known about computer science really otherwise. We had IT, but that's basically Microsoft Office studies. So so having grown up with the system, it kind of encouraged me more to look at it and, you know, write in a terminal occasionally, oh, this is actually how a computer works, and some of the more back-end stuff, which was really cool. So yeah, that helped me to go do computer science. But then also, yeah, I like the idea of everyone being able to contribute and just be like being able to share things freely and things that influences my music as well. All my music is released under Creative Commons. I don't really like have full copyright over it. I'm like, share it if you want, as long as you tell people where it's from and that it's me, like, I'm fine. So I don't know, I quite like that philosophy in general.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it is, because it's a little less greedy and it's a little bit more thinking of the wider, you know, it's thinking about how your personal actions affect the world, and like, you know, if you're developing a piece of software, or if you're even using and supporting a piece of software, it's nice that you know, those individual actions, so it's recognized how they fit into the wider world and the wider framework. It's not just you buy something, you use it, you throw it away. It's, you know, there's substantially more to it than that. And I think the end result for whatever it is that you create or you use, I feel, and I, you know, this is definitely a subjective feeling, that you have like more ownership over it, or not more ownership, that it's more yours, that there is more of an attachment to you for it, because it's not the product of a piece of software that's developed by a big company far away. It's the sort of the amalgamous effort of not just you, but the people that develop the software, the people that develop the infrastructure for the software. And it's, even though that doesn't change from free to proprietary software, free software definitely recognizes the work and the back end and the stuff that goes on behind that, and the knock-on effect it is, you know, that your actions have on the world, which is amazing, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And the knock-on to that as well is free and open source software now is being deployed in developing countries where it's used for education and sort of political organizations and campaigning for rights and all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's great that you know, we in a developed country with a lot of advantages that brings, can then, you know, support a movement which then goes on to help people all over the world for all different kinds of reasons as well. And it's great because, you know, if, like, I can only speak for myself, but I don't know the first thing about how to live and survive in most of the rest of the world. I'm pretty sheltered, if I'm completely honest. But it is great that I can be part of something that's still a positive influence, despite my personal ignorance, which I think is really quite good.
Yeah. I guess the other thing that I like about like the open source software in general is that it's probably less the fact that it's open source and more just that it's less well known. The like monopoly that Microsoft used to have and still largely has on the market, and you know, you go to school and all your machines run Windows and you use Microsoft Office, and like literally no people didn't even know there was any alternatives. And I'm like, you're paying quite a lot of money. Like, it's not insignificant to have these things. I mean, okay, if it comes on your laptop, it's less. But again, that's so that they get you. And I don't know, that there's something about that I really don't like. It's like people just don't really have a choice because they don't know about it.
That's it, yeah.
And yeah, so I was always a passionate advocate for... I think in year 11, I did a project thing about whether schools should be using Linux or Windows.
Awesome,
so I used to go to the library and then kind of just get distracted reading loads of articles and then think, okay, I've achieved nothing in 2 hours and have to do it later. But like, yeah, that was quite fun.
that's very similar to my story. But then with that wasted time, I made YouTube videos. Which is, yeah. And it sucks you in. It's great. Like, I can't, like, explaining this to other people is incredibly difficult to do because... Mm-hmm. Getting excited about a new version of a piece of software, like, especially, you know, maybe it's something to do with networking, or maybe it's something to do with icons or something. And getting excited about that it seems really dorky. Yeah. And I think I'm at the stage now where I'm not even embarrassed about it. And, you know, it's kind of nice to sound smart about something, despite the fact that half of this stuff really isn't that complicated if you sort of lay it out.
Yeah, I had that to quite an extreme extent as well. And it was nice going to uni for me because I went to an all-girls school and I was literally the weirdo who likes computers and everyone hated even like IT. And I was like, hey, all Linux, this, like all this. And everyone just thinks I'm really weird, you know, going to take over the world one day and take down Microsoft or something. That was their idea. But then I went to university and did computer science, as I say, at Cambridge. And like everyone just loves it. And so you're just chatting to people and it's just totally normal and you can have all the, and everyone had heard of Linux. I'd got used to being like, oh, I use Linux. Then was like blank face. And all these people I'd like, go to automatically explain it. They're like, oh no, we know what that is. And I'm like, whoa, this is a whole different world. So yeah, it's nice to be surrounded by like-minded people. And I guess there's a lot in this community. So yeah.
Wow. Computer science at Cambridge of all places. That's quite an impressive.
Well, I kind of feel like it.
What kind of computers do they have there? They must have like some of the top of the line stuff that you get to play around on.
Not really. At least not an undergrad. They probably do postgrads, and like if you're doing more of that, just undergrad, just had normal machines. Although they did have dual boot Linux, which made me happy, although it was Ubuntu. Oh, so but you know,
my brother's doing computer science up at Aberystwyth University, and I think one of the professors at that university designed the Tux Penguin.
Oh, nice.
Which is, I don't know if they teach at the university or whether or not they were just there for a presentation that I saw, but yeah. That's quite. I quite wish I could have gone to Aberystwyth. I didn't get the grades because I'm absolutely terrible at school things. But he's a lot better than I am, so he managed to get into it because it's by the beach as well, which is nice.
Always a win.
Which is always nice. Yeah, the closest I've ever been to Cambridge myself is Norwich, but Norwich is beautiful. I love Norwich. Mm-hmm. I really like the Rocky theme tune on your channel. That came together really nicely.
Wait, what's that one?
The Rocky theme tune. The Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, that's fun. I like that one.
that came together. Yeah, your music's really nice, actually. I don't want to do open source a disservice, but I gotta say that like does look super professional and like. Even with this channel that I do here, like this, it's a rough around the edges, almost kind of by design. Like Linux does have this sort of culture of, well, it doesn't look too great, but it does the job really, really well. It's changing now. There are some absolutely amazing themes that are out there. I use the Arc theme. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a nice, very sleek, very like it's a black flat theme. Oh, it makes Windows 10 look horrendously ugly. This is absolutely beautiful. But it doesn't seem like Linux. Linux really shouldn't be smooth, in my opinion. It should be, it should be sort of snappy. Like to me, XFCE, the desktop environment, is like to me the epitome of what Linux is. It's like highly customizable, fast. It doesn't look amazing, but with a few tweaks, you can get it to look quite nice. And that's, that's sort of where I am with it. What's your desktop environment of choice? I forgot to ask.
Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
Yeah, just use that with it.
How's that working?
Yeah, fine. Does the job again. Looks quite nice. Doesn't get in my way.
Yeah.
I guess I quite like that about Linux, though, because if you want, you know, if you really don't care about what anything looks like, you can just have your little speedy solution that just does what you want. But then if you're a person who likes to wow people, you can find other things and you can get as bloated or as small a distribution as you like, really. And very much more rather than one size fits all, which is what the other ones all kind of come in. So
there's a lot of comments coming up about independent learning. I gotta admit, like tests, I don't know, like I'm not necessarily too bad at tests. I'm just bad in the whole academic sphere of things. Tests are actually not too bad. I'm sort of mediocre at tests, but it's everything else that I'm, you know, I was an awkward teenager and just like, you know, the formalized education just doesn't stick. And I, you know, like with me, what I really learned, you know, with me with computers, it was tinkering around with free and open source software that really was how I got on and learnt it. And I got a job in computers now. Don't have like a single serious qualification in computers now because of word and mouth and you know, I live in a small village where there aren't really that many people who are good with computers, so a captive audience there. Yeah, I agree with Q Edwards' point, actually. The standardization of testing, you know, really, it sort of stifles it stifles intellectual curiosity as well. So like, for example, if you're only ever being taught about Windows, you're going to get more and more entrenched in Windows, and then you're going to be more reluctant to try out new things, especially when you're older.
Yeah,
I definitely noticed that now I'm getting older. Just picking up new habits, just trying to drop bad habits and pick up new ones, is so much more difficult than it was 10 years ago, or even less than that in the last 5 years. It's sort of, as I'm approaching 30 now, it's crikey, it's just not.
I feel like it's also, there's very much a case of learning for the tests that is the, like, a culture of it. And I don't know whether it's becoming more and more like that now, but it kind of is that things aren't really done for enjoyment. It's done to pass a test. And if something's not on your test, what's the point of doing it? Which I guess is why we never learned about anything else in ICT apart from Microsoft Office, because this is what's going to help you in your exams. Like, you don't really need to know about these other niche things that, even though it would be fun, maybe I'm biased, but it would be fun to learn about it. It's like, I always found that the things that I weren't being officially taught in, I enjoyed the most. Like, definitely, the instruments that I didn't have lessons in, I loved to practice for some reason. The maths module I wasn't being taught in, I loved doing. But yeah, the rest of it, when it's like forced at you, it just automatically feels like, maybe I don't want to do it.
Learning is a bit like going into a swimming pool. It's kind of cold at first. And if you get put, you know, if you get pushed in, it's not going to be any fun. But if you go in at your own accord, you've got, you know, it's a bit more, you know, and I think when you're learning on your own terms in a more sort of relaxed or suitable environment, you absorb more information anyway. So, I mean, it's the one size fits all approach that doesn't, you know.
Yeah, the very tricky issues.
Yeah, but then that's where open source just comes into its own, because it can mold and fit and be customized to suit so many different kinds of people and so many different kinds of working environments. I've got a spare laptop that I loan out to people that need it. And what I did is I copied an ISO image directly onto the hard disk of this laptop, so that I've got it's a non-persistent distribution. It's a live CD. And then it completely resets the laptop, gets rid of all the information on it every time it's turned off. So I can now lend that laptop out to someone. They can use it to do whatever it is they need to do. And then it gets wiped before it even gets back to me. So it's completely, you know, they're completely in control of the information that they're using the computer with. You could never do that on Windows. You know, that's just...
No.
No. And also the remote desktop stuff is just so much easier in Linux as well. So
yeah, I've not tried much of that myself. But...
No. But I was quite intrigued to find out that... Are you familiar with PowerShell, which is the command line for Windows?
Yeah, well, I am. My fiance does a lot of work with that, so I've heard a bit about it, but I haven't firsthand experience at all. But yeah,
they're open sourcing it.
I saw that. Yeah, that looked interesting.
Yeah, and I think do you know? Here's a conspiracy theory, but it is very much a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, right? And I'd like to hear what the commenters have to say about this, right? But I think that Microsoft may become Linux in a way, right? And here's what, right, because clearly Microsoft want to make money through their app store, and they definitely seem to not want to make money from their licensing. Now, obviously they license some servers and some like administration machines and whatnot, but they also give a lot of their versions away either at a discounted price or for free, like their student edition or their OEM editions and so forth. But if they intend to shift their model to an app store model, there really is no point in them maintaining their own kernel. So if they start open sourcing the stuff that they don't make money on, maybe get a bit of, you know, free community support involvement, maybe as a bit of good graces to the open source and Linux community, and then piece by piece, you know, today it's PowerShell. Was there a language that they open sourced that Microsoft did? I know that Apple open sourced Swift. But I don't, Microsoft have been like open sourcing a few things from time to time. And, you know, if they're going to, you know, if they just send all of their kernel stuff upstream, is there even a point? I mean, there's no point. They're not closing anyone out. It makes their software work on more machines with less work. If I was Mr. Microsoft, I'd be doing it.
Yeah, I guess it's how much. Yeah, how long their hold's gonna stay on the market, right? Because Apple have gained loads in the last few years, haven't they? So
they have.
If it's gonna carry on like that, then maybe they're being left behind. But if not, I guess it's still.
And I think there is a possibility. No one believes me when I say this, right? Because I'm full of like crazy theories. But I reckon SteamOS could cut into the market. I genuinely think it could. Now, a lot of people are saying SteamOS is off to a slow start, and I absolutely 100% agree, as is the Steam boxes. But Steam is 13 years old. So Valve, they play the long game. So SteamOS might not be heard of for the next 5 years. And then it might just come back up as a resurgence about then. And if they've got a decent GNOME desktop and, you know, big picture mode, they can get the price point down to something reasonable, build up a few more games in the library, although there are over 2,000 games for Linux now. So,
wow.
I've stopped looking for new games on it. It's just... it's gotten to the point where I can see a game on like a Let's Play or any kind of review, and I can type it into Steam, and there's a pretty good chance that there will be a Linux port for it, especially the kind of games I like. Gaming on Linux is amazing, like thousands upon thousands of games, and it's, I think, like, released in the last month alone, it's absolutely remarkable. So in a couple of, you know, in a couple of years time, I think we might see a small steady market share, maybe on par with Linux as a whole, and then it would possibly sneak in, especially if Microsoft decide to make their distribution, you know, worse.
Well, they're due for a worse one every other release, aren't they? So the next one's going to be showing.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. I can't work out whether or not Windows 10 is a good one or a bad one, because Windows 8 and 8.1 were bad. Would you say they're both bad?
Yeah.
And
apparently Windows 7, well, Windows XP was great. Windows 7 was all right. You know, mm-hmm. Windows Vista was shocking. Windows 8 was shocking. I don't know. I've heard mixed things about Windows 10. Some people seem to quite like it. Others are having lots of problems with it. I think its update system seems to mess a lot of people around.
Oh, yes.
No one
uses Cortana. It's, you know, I'm not surprised. People don't like talking to their computers because it's like...
Oh, yeah.
you've lost all your privacy, haven't you? Like, type, you know, if you're... You know, a lot of people probably don't want... So, like, I Googled dumb, or not Google, I use DuckDuckGo, but, you know, the corporate hold on the verb Google is
yeah.
tight. But I search for some really dumb stuff like, you know, do flies hibernate? And so, you know, and it's like, I don't want to be reminded of that when I start search, you know, the next time I'm going into Google how to, and then my daft previous suggestions come up. Windows 98 SE was the best, says Q Edwards. I don't know. I think, see, I didn't even like Windows XP. When that came out, they changed the file system to NTFS, and that made like a third of my games stopped working at the time. Oh.
Nightmare. Yeah. I mean, I remember my mum had Windows 95 when I was young. So I remember using that. Paint was my favorite thing. You know, I'd sit there for hours doing like one dot at a time, making a nice picture. But I haven't really used the more recent versions apart from at school, where it'd be extra frustrating because obviously there's all their security systems to stop you doing anything. So as much as Windows would normally bug me for being like, are you sure you want to go in this folder? I'm like, yes, that's why I clicked on it. Please, nagging me. All the extra stuff about you literally can't do anything. That used to frustrate me a lot. So haven't had much experience with it recently. But
yeah. See, I'm always shocked whenever I come across a bug, because I feel like this is a £100 piece of software. Why do you have bugs?
And it's like some of the most ridiculous ones as well. I think I was using... the Office database, I can't remember what it's called, the Office Suite database thing. And every time you press cancel on a dialogue, it would crash out.
Oh.
It's like, that's not even a small bug. Like, that's really bad. But yeah, I used to use it as, you know, backup evidence for why Linux was better. And everyone just rolled their eyes. But yeah.
And I got to say, when it comes to Linux, it doesn't matter if I'm doing the most basic command, but doing it on the command line terminal does make me feel like a hacker. Like, there is no, you know, I've got, what's my color theme? So I've got the green text on the black background. Of course I do. But it's, it just feels really satisfying to do out a command.
Yeah, and especially if you're like on the bus or in the bar or something, like the bar at uni, you're just there, like, I know everyone can see the fact I'm just using text editors. And I had like three Emacs windows at the time when I was trying to learn Emacs, and I swiftly gave up. But like, you know, it was cool while I had it. So. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was one time I was a bit younger and a bit more showy offy, and I did have, and this is when netbooks were quite big, and I had Linux on a netbook. What was it? It was only Ubuntu or something, but it had a music player that was in the command line. And I'm pretty sure I just played my playlist on the command line so that anyone looking over my shoulder was like, oh, what's he doing?
Whoa, magic. Yeah. Sounds about right. Oh,
yeah. Linux hipster. So thanks for having a chat.
Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, it's been fun.
No problem. Yeah, so all of you guys watching this should go and check out the channel if you want to see what open source, if you want to hear what open source music sounds like. It's a really good channel. I'm really impressed with it. And like, you know, across the board as well, and not just the open source side of things as well, like your lighting's great and the sound quality is amazing. Definitely worth checking out. Excellent stuff. And all free and open source, all done on free and open source software.
Yep. And Creative Commons as well. Yeah.
Awesome. So thanks very much for you guys in the chat for joining us. I'm going to close off the stream now, but thank you very much for passing by. I'll be editing this podcast and it'll be going up. This will be going up on the channel and the podcast place where I put the podcasts, the SoundCloud. That's it. But yeah, because this is like a nice Linuxy one, I thought let's have it on the main channel. So. That's about it for me today. Emily, do you want to do an outro?
Okay. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. Apparently, no, I can't do an outro. You can find my channel at www.emilyfoxmusic.co.uk, and there's a link there. And see you soon.
Okay. Goodbye.